Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
We went there just thinking it was just going to be a jolly up. We're going to go to Germany, have a laugh, get a few signed tops, you know what I mean? Swap with a few players and then come back. Hi, I'm Roel Fox and this is my Norwich City story. Which is the only team that really wanted me at the time. Long and short of it, I was playing for my local team, Wick United in Ipswich, been playing for as kids, you know, doing a normal Sunday league, Saturday league football. Had a few trials for the district, didn't get the district team at Suffolk. I had a friend of mine lived directly across the road from me called Louis Donner at the time. So I used to be always pestering him every day, come on, get me a trial, get me a trial, get me a trial. In the end, I think he got that sick of me knocking on his door every other day that he decided to take me down for a trial. At the same time, I then got contacted through the a manager and the Suffolk FA saying that I had trials at Ipswich. So I had to divide between the two. I went to Ipswich for the first 2 weeks. They seemed interested but didn't want to actually tie me down or say anything. So then I thought, well, why not? I'll go up to Norwich. Went to Norwich and within 2 days they said they want to sign me. So the long and short of it is that they paid more interest and they wanted me more than perhaps Ipswich did at that time. So I decided to sign. I wouldn't say I was an Ipswich Town fan. I mean, I love football. So at the time I was probably more... when you look at the tables, you know, you go for your Man United. I was a Man United fan, also West Bromwich Albion fan. You kind of look at players where in your position. At that time, I think it was Steve Coppell was playing for Manchester United, and then there wasn't many black players around at that time. So I think at the time, West Bromwich Albion had a few black players: Laurie Carroll, Cyril Regis, Brendan Batson, Remy Moses, I think was playing. So you kind of play a football over the park, you attach yourself to a player, you know, pretend to be them. So they were the two main teams, West Bromwich Albion and Man United were my favourite teams. It was just loads of fun. I mean, I think I was quite fortunate. I mean, even though it is now, I mean, this is a family club. And a lot of clubs say they're family clubs, but they don't perform the duties what you would think of a family club, i.e. they look after the players, make sure that the families are comfortable with the players being here. Because at that time, I think we had... We used to have quite an influx of Irish players, you know, and players from all over the country coming in. We also used to stay up the road, it's called the Stacey House, for digs. So we had digs and them ties where you know, Scottish players, you know, Irish players, you know, all sorts of players, all staying in a dig. So it was important that the club made you feel comfortable, and they did. You know, they looked after me. They always made sure, even when I was a schoolboy, we had a coach. Who sadly passed away, Ronnie Brooks. he was not a father figure to me. I didn't grow up with a father, so he was my first contact with a kind of father figure who I could go to and speak to, you know, and if I felt that I was getting a bit homesick, even though it's just down the road, he would make sure, you know, he'd get my brother to come up and see me, or vice versa, my mum would come up, or he'd let me go home for an extra day. So, you know, you remember them things. So it was quite easy for me to settle in because we had a good bunch of players around me.
Did Louis Donovan feel an extra responsibility while you were coming through?
Yeah. Also, it was great for him because I obviously he taught me how to drive a car and everything like that. So it was good. I mean, it was great for me because when you're going somewhere, don't forget, I think when I started coming up, I was 13 years old. So even to that, I was a bit naive about it. You know, I was coming out of an environment where I was quite comfortable. We were very multicultural in Ipswich, so coming here, it was slightly different. There weren't a lot of, it wasn't so cultural. So I would say there weren't a lot of black players here. So I used to get a little bit of stick here and there. So it was important to have us, you know, Dale Gordon also was a great influence for me. And Dale Gordon and Louis Donner, you know, they both looked after me while I was growing up. Plus a lot of the senior players. So they made it a lot easier. Can you give me this one? Send this one to me.
Yeah.
Robert Rosario, God's sake, I look about, I think I probably would have been about 20 years old there. Again, when I hark back about players I used to look after, Robert Rosario, big burly striker, good looking bloke, so stunning guy. So whichever way it was, he looked after me on the pitch and he always looked after me off the pitch. So yeah, he was great. You know, I think I was around the same youth setup when he was in that team. That's a good picture, that is, Robert Rosario. I think it was Ken Brown gave me a debut. Oh, love the guy. Get Ken Brown again. Another guy, you know, when I first went there, he was brilliant. You know, used to take me in his office, have a little bit of banter with me at a young age. So I'm always grateful to people like that. And Ken Brown, he'd always look out for me, always ask me how well I played in the youth team. He'd always, you know, say to me, I'm going to come and watch you this week, make sure you're performing. So we had this kind of, again, a lot of father figure thing where I think we had this bond where he used to come up to me all the time. And, you know, even when I got to my pro contract, which was quite early for a pro, I was 17, straight away he put me into the first team change rooms where a lot of them stayed. You had your section, you had a youth team's change rooms. So you had your apprentices, you have to go into the door, knock on the door, get their boots, clean their boots. You didn't really have no contact with them. So at 17, he put me into that change room. So again, it was great for me. So he was the one who gave me debut, and I think it was Coventry City, I think it was debut. Don't remember much, I just remember running around. So, you know what I mean? It's just, you hear the fans, you know, you're sprinting around, you get a few touches of the ball. But I think it was looking back at it, I think it was a good game for him to give my debut. I think I played against one of the old left-backs who used to be here, Greg Downs. So I think he was on his way out. So I think it was ideal. You know, he had someone like me who was young and quite quick running at him. So it was a good debut for me. On one hand, you're excited because my progression was quite quick. I went from Sunday League football here, then went to youth team. And you know, like I said earlier, you usually go through a progression where from 16 to 18 to 21, you go from youth team to reserves. And from the reserves, you might get a thing. I didn't really play hardly any reserve games. I probably played two or three at 17 and went straight to the first team. So for me, it was a big transition. So it's almost like they were saying to me, yep, you're doing well. You know, we've put you ahead of everybody in your youth setup. And then obviously getting a few games and then being pulled out. So at the time, there weren't such things as rotation and that. But I can understand, thinking about it now, it was probably a case where he was trying to rest me. But it was frustrating for me because I felt that I was doing everything correct. But at the same time, you got to remember, we still had Dale Gordon here and other players here. So I think the time Dale left and went to Rangers, I think then I started to get more regular games. It was probably something that, it takes a long time to repeat what we achieved. I mean, because the Premiership just started then as well. So everyone was excited about it. You know, the cameras, it was all new Sky and everything else. The interaction with the players was a lot better. So for us, looking back at it, it was fantastic. But at the time of it, we never even looked at it as something special. You know, you do now, obviously you retire and all that, but the way we played, the excitement of the league and Sky and everything, it was a brilliant season. the season before that, we weren't too good. You know, I figure it might in combination with Dave Stringer before that, then it chopped over again. So I think it was a transition. I think the job became to Mike Walker by, might be a slight accident in a way, because obviously, he was keeper coach and bit of reserve manager. So for him to get pushed into that for the players, it gave us a chance then, because he was quite open with us. So again, it reminded me of Ken Brown, it reminded me of Ronnie Brooks, or my era. We all suddenly had this, you know, no disrespect to any other manager, but he started to bring his reserve players in, you know, so it had that feel of, you know, players having a chance again. So this season was fantastic for us.
You were 8 points clear at Christmas.
I know, ridiculous, wasn't it? Ridiculous. I mean, people say it's similar to how Leicester were. You know, I get reminded all the time, you haven't been Leicester. And when you look back at it, it was. But at not one time did we, it sounds weird, but we never thought we was going to win. We never thought, I mean, we was more concerned about going on these runs because we had a bit of a win bonus. So we knew if we kept winning in concession that we would get more bonus money, because all the money wasn't, it was good, but it weren't fantastic. So for us, it was just a case of, you know, we were just going out having fun. Every time we went out there, then next week we won a game. And then it just takes on a rhythm of, you know, you don't fear anyone. There's more teams were fearing us all the time.
How much was the win bonus?
Not a lot. I'll be saying that. Obviously, it for us as footballers, we say it's not a lot, but to the normal people at work, so I won't disrespect them and start saying I didn't appreciate the money. But put it this way, sometimes the bonuses were bigger than the wages, because again, we used to be able to sit down at the beginning of the season. You had a club captain, you had a few of the senior players, or the ones who were important. They would sit down with someone from a football club, and you negotiate what bonuses you got. So they probably said, oh, they'll never get top five. So our top five bonus was probably bigger than a lot of the wages. So when we got in the top five, it was almost, it was happy day for us. But obviously for the club, they were thinking, Jesus, probably can't wait for them to lose a few games. So for us, it was brilliant. Oh, remember this one, Lee Power. We was like the Bostic boys, they used to call us. It was me, Lee Power, Chris Sutton. We used to always hang about together, so we'd be the ones who were giving out the stick at the football clubs. Off the pitch, we virtually lived together. You know, we spent a lot of time there, which kind of helped on the football pitch. So yeah, I remember Lee was probably on the edges of getting in the team, and I think he just got back in the team against Man City. And I think it was either, we had a stint when me and him played up front for some strange reason. I don't know what it was, but I just set him up with a goal there. So we just covered to some crazy dance. I don't know what it was, but yeah, still keep in touch with him. Top man, love him to death, Lee Power.
That's an iconic celebration, that.
I know. I think we must have started it off like, but yeah, I mean, that just it just makes me smile looking at it. I've actually got this picture at home. I mean, every game was a pressure game, and I think every game we went to, Sky cameras are following us. You know, it was all fun and games. You know, I mean, we were conceding a lot of goals, but scoring more than the other team. And I think we had Villa here? Yeah, John Paulson got the winning goal. But again, Villa had loads of chances. They should have beat us off the park. And I think then after that game, was it Old Trafford?
I was here.
No, and I think we got a bit of a lesson in football, I think, that day. I think they had Kachelka, Skiggs, Cantona, Ince. God's sake, I mean, I can remember a few times they were just breaking on us. It was a classic counter-attack. And I think then, I don't know if we played them at Old Trafford just before that and only just lost it by a single goal, a return leg. But I think that's when we kind of thought, do you know what, maybe people will stop telling us that we're going to win this league. You know, we realise now, we started to think, well, if we finish second, if we finish third, then, you know, which is ideally where we finish in the end. We watched the game. But again, because, and it sounds weird, we weren't even concerned about it. We wasn't thinking we wanted to finish in Europe. It was a case where we were just so happy of finishing in a high spot. So obviously we watched the game, but we didn't know the ramifications of it, that, you know, if they win, then we weren't even looking at them kind of scenarios. All we were thinking about is, well, you know, we're finishing, you know, in a top three. That's great for us. That was our main concern. So like you said, qualifying Europe, that was just an added bonus for us. I don't know what's happening there. Norwich City at must. against Man United. Cantona, there was a little bit of a scuffle. I think Chris Sutton's in that scuffle. I'm on the outside, staying out of trouble. Obviously, height-wise, I'm not really going to get involved with the big fella. So I don't know what it was, but there was a little scuffle against Man United. Might have been the game here. It might be the game here where they eventually beat us. So I think there was obviously a lot of pressure on both teams. There was a lot of emotions. So yeah, I do remember that little bundle in the middle of the park. By then, like I said, we've already seen what the league had to offer. You know, so for us, it was almost, we was under, not would say under pressure, because we'd done so well the season before that. So it was a case of teams were fearing us by then. You know, some of us were getting a bit established. We were getting consistent games under your belt. You know, Chris was a young lad just coming to the team. So everything, we had Effin, like you said, Effin and Cook, we signed. So everything started to flow really nicely. And then obviously we had the Europe. So we needed that squad as well. So again, these European teams didn't really know anything about us because, you know, they probably looked at our record. I think, well, 2 seasons ago, they were nearly relegated. So for them, I don't think they really took us too serious.
Such as Bayern Munich. What was that like going into Munich and playing that game? The TV pictures always make it look sort of half empty and no one really...
I think because of the old stadium, don't forget, I think it had a track around it. So the atmosphere wasn't that good anyway, but it was full up. It was full up. We could see our fans clearly there. It was full up. But I keep remarking back, it just felt like a normal game for us. We went there just thinking it was just going to be a jolly up. We're going to go to Germany, have a laugh, get a few signed tops, you know what I mean? Swap with a few players and then come back. So again, I think it was more the other teams kept underestimating us. We were just thinking, you know, we'll just keep going as far until we blow up. Oh, that's a good one again. Chasing Jeremy Goss after his goal against Bayern Munich. Classic picture. I mean, like you said, he can dine on that for the rest of his life, Gossy. I mean, I still see him now. I mean, everyone loves him. You know, he's such a nice, humble guy as well. So thoroughly deserved. And, you know, it brings a smile to the face seeing that picture of him.
Whose shirt did you get? Can you remember from the home leg?
I can't remember if it was Mateus or not. I can't remember.
Had a 2 on the back.
I've still got it, but it's framed up now in a glass frame. I think he was a Brazilian. Yeah, Adriano, I can't remember his name. It was brilliant. I mean, again, because of the season we had before, the support's always been brilliant. I mean, and that was probably one night the hairs at the back of your neck stood up. It was quite an emotional, especially after the game. It was kind of thing, once we got back to the change rooms and then we all realised there was a few tears, that, you know, I mean, obviously you got your joy there, but I think you sit there and the adrenaline starts to drain from you, and then you kind of get a little bit emotional because you think, do you know what, we've just beaten Bayern Munich, who have never been beaten at their ground up until the time, you know, who probably still fancy beating us here. But, you know, and what we're talking about, the world-class players I had there, they're worth more than us on paper by far. Oh, that's the one, Bayern Munich. Yeah, that's the one. We beat him in the second leg at Caro. Got to swap tops with the right back. And I think my mates were just near the tunnel then. So I was waving to my mates. And all I could see them gesturing to me to give me their top, give me my top to them. So yeah, I've got that picture again. Iconic picture. Happy memories.
Jorginho, I think his name was.
Yes, Jorginho. Yeah, I knew it was Brazilian. Yeah, Jorginho. Yeah, so I've still got that framed at the moment. It came down, do you know what it was like, Sergeant? It was one of the ones where we were slowly hitting our peak. And I think by the time we got in, we're now at a different level. And I think we're talking about fitness levels and everything else here. Don't forget, like I said, even though our fitness levels were good, compared to, we was always playing the catch-up at them times with the European teams because they'd done things differently, you know, they had fitness camps. And that shoe off of that game, I mean, we stuck with them through, I'd say, most of the game, and then it got to around the hour mark and you could see they were getting fitter and fitter and fitter, and we were just slowly dropping. You look back and now there's not a lot you could do about it, you know what I mean? It wasn't a case where we weren't trying hard enough. I think it just came down to quality and fitness in the end. All of a sudden the emphasis was on Norwich City Football Club then, because it was a case of, well, hold on a minute, we've now given you something that you never expected. What's the next steps for the club? Because there's going to be interest from clubs, which is how it ended up being. You know, there's going to be clubs looking at who they think is the high profile players. You know, so it was a case of Norwich City either broke their pay structure, or you know, or they went to buy someone which is way above their level. And it coincided with them saying, well, look, we're at our peak. This is where we are. We can't go any higher because we want to keep the structure, which is a brave and a fair point for them to make. I thought it was quite premature. But again, I wasn't there when he was having a conversation with the chairman, because he might have done... I remember I was coming out in the press at the time, and so was quite a few of the senior players, because we knew at the end of the day we had a few senior players there who had probably had two seasons in them. So for me, as a... I would say I was in the middle, 26. So for me, I was coming to my peak. So I want to see the Mark Robins coming, the Efren Cooklers. I want to see a progression and some more quality players coming in, because you've got to remember that up at that time, you know, you got your Mark Burns, Ian Crooks and all these players. We had Butterworth, Brian Gunn and Rob Newman. All these players were in, coming up towards their 30s. So for us, we was looking at the bigger picture, and the club was probably thinking, well, you know, we can't afford to be buying 5, 6, 7 players, which is probably a conversation he had with Mike. So it then ended up with him getting an offer from Everton and trying his luck there.
Do you remember when he told you he was leaving? Can you remember what happened?
Yeah, it was quite brief. John Deere was his assistant. I think John Deere was the one who came in and told us. He said that Everton had approached him. He's gone up there to speak to him. And that was quite a brief conversation. You know, we looked at, we was in shock. But at the same time, we had Dave Williams there and John Deere, who had a big input in for how the club was developing and who got in the team. So it wasn't a case where Mike was running the whole setup. You know, Dave Williams, John Deere had a big input as well, so it wasn't panic stated, but it was disappointing. Obviously, straight after, again, I wasn't kicking up any fuss. I was happy where we were. You know what I mean? We had a great setup here. We were a great family. All the players hung out together. You know, everything. We was quite comfortable. Well, I was as well. So I hadn't heard nothing. I think I was at home one day coming into train, driving up to come to training, and I got a call off the chairman. And Robert Chase at the time, and he said, just to let you know, we'd like to offer you a new contract. Would you come in? And I thought, well, strange, I just signed one. So I went in, and then all of a sudden the story comes. He said, oh, by the way, we want you signed a contract, but Newcastle are coming for you. So it was kind of, well, you're telling me one thing, but now you're telling me another thing. So it's a kind of thing which is fair enough. He gave me the choice. He said, look, they've come in for you. They've made a substantial bid, which we might accept, but if you don't want to go, let us know, but we'd like you to sign a new deal. So I was kind of thinking, I said, well, I'm happy with the deal I've got, and not being big-headed, I was one of the highest paid players there anyway, so I don't think they were going to give me any more money than I was getting anyway. So it was a case of, do you want to speak to Newcastle? So I thought, well, he's almost given me the choice to do it. So that's how it ended. I went from going to training to turning around, going back to Ipswich, packing my bags and getting on a plane to fly up to Newcastle to go speak to Kevin Keegan. It just happened so quickly. Didn't even get to say goodbye to him, because, again, it happened so quickly. I was always in shock, because one minute I'm coming into train, next minute I'm turning my car around. I'm obviously phoned my mate Chris Sutton and a few others saying, look, man, but he told me to keep it quiet, so because at the initial I was just going up there to talk to him. So as far as I was concerned, nobody knew about it. And the only time I knew that then obviously let the story out, by the time I got to Stansted, all the press were there at Stansted, and they all were phoning me up saying, Robert Chase just said you've turned down the contract and you want to go talk to Newcastle, which is a little bit over-exaggerated, but, you know, it happens in football, you know. So I ended up going up there, speaking of Newcastle, and because the offer was so big and they sold the club to me, massive club, I didn't end up even coming back to get me gear. I just stayed up Newcastle. So that was quite a strange way to leave a club, but, you know, it happens in football. I was just coming towards the end of my career, and I was hammering home whether to retire, because I've been quite fortunate. I play at the highest level. I never really had any injuries. I didn't really need to stop. I just kind of started falling a little bit out of love with it. I think I had a up and down time at Tottenham towards the end of my career. So I got a call from, again, ex-teammate Gary Megson. He said, oh, would you like to come up? And I was saying, well, no, I'm not too sure. Ended up persuading me to go up there, you know, sold the club to me, told me, you know, what he was trying to do with the players and stuff, and would like to have me there as an experienced player. So again, me going up there, it then reminded me, I thought, oh God, West Bromwich Albion. So the key factor for me to go in there was obviously I've I was a fan of West Brom growing up. One of my idols was Cyril Regis. And then when he told me that Cyril Regis was still part of the club, he was still helping out, then it was a no-brainer. Got straight in the car, drove up there, sorted out signing for West Brom. And straight away, first question was, where's Cyril Regis? Just wanted to meet him, wanted to meet the guy. I brought me, and I even got an old West Bromwich Albion book for him to sign. So, you know, it was a great ending, I would say, to my footballing career. Growing up as a young man, like I spoke about earlier, it's no beating around it. It was a lot of racism around, you know what I mean? I was a black player. There was racism here. There's racism wherever I played, you know. We was a minority then where it comes to football, you know. I remember being 13, 14, getting abused all around Norwich when I used to play all the time. But it was lucky, I brushed it off in a way, because it was a case where I let my football do all the talking. Plus, my brother used to come along and fight everyone on the pitch, which got me in a lot of trouble, got the club in a lot of trouble. But I had people looking after me in a good way. So for me, looking up to someone, everyone's got their idols. So for me, at the time, there weren't a lot of black players playing at the high level, until I used to then see Cyril Regis, Brendan Batson, Laurie Cunningham, great player Laurie Cunningham, you know, Remy Mose and all that. So you get attracted to it. So I was fortunate enough to have the yellow and green stripe tops as well that I used to wear. So for me, you know what I mean, it was great to meet someone that inspired me to play football. And that's the first thing I told him when I went up to West Bromwich Albion.
You're in the Hall of Fame here. How special is that for you?
I'm very proud of it. I'm very proud. I mean, like I said, for a lad off the Ipswich estate, I still go back there now. I'm still part of the estate now. So I'm quite a humble guy, you know. I'm not really into all this glam and everything like that. I still got my same friends from school. So for me to be accepted at such a big club like this, as in the Hall of Fame, I'm quite proud. It's proud for me, you know. I'll give an example. This is the only club that I come back to regular and watch football and keep an eye out for them all the time. You know, like I said, I know I harked at beginning saying I'm a supporter of, you know, football, West Brom, Man United. You know, I live in Ipswich. So, I watch out for their results. And, it's a shame the way they're going. But, you know, it's just great to be recognised as a something that's done quite well, I would say, at a football club. So I'm very honoured and humbled. They tried to get me back a couple of times. I think just when I was leaving, between me going to West Brom, when I left Tottenham, down for about, I just thought myself, it returning back to a club's a big thing. It's a big thing because the players, not just the players, the club, the fans, they remember you as the player you were. And I was a little bit, I was thinking, well, hold on a minute, I'm not the same player. I'm not going to be tearing up and down the wing. I think I was 32, 33. I was thinking, you know, you're going to get a different type of player. But I just felt that I'd been here, God's sake, from childhood. Don't forget, I'm talking nearly 10 years. So for me, that you know, I felt that I've done enough at this club. And in some capacity, I would have probably liked to have come back in some sort of course. But at the time, I just felt it the timing would have been all wrong. Rubbish. I'm better at eating than I am running a restaurant. I'll put that down. I had a restaurant in Ipswich. It was all right. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed it at the time. Looking back, you know what I mean? There's no point in having regrets, but it's not something I would go back into, put it that way.
And how about Witten United? Where you started, where you are now?
Yeah, started at Witten United as a kid, got discovered there. I now run my fitness camp, my boot camps at Witten United Football Club. I've been chairman at Witten United Football Club since I'm retired. I still play for the veterans team with Kieran Dyer, Titus Bramble plays for them. So we've got a bit of a decent vets team as well. So yeah, I love it. I love it. Like I told you, I'm a humble guy. I'm always going to be an Ipswich guy. I'm from Witten Estate. I still live there now. I go back there all the time, and that's where I feel most comfortable. Your Norwich City hero. Oof. I'd have to say, without really thinking too much into it, depends what hero as in as I looked up to or I played with.
Anyone to do with your time here?
My time here, I would say the player would be Ian Crook. I mean, I wouldn't say he wouldn't go down the hero route, but I think with me being a team, he helped me develop as a player, because without his passes, I wouldn't even be after the player. So Ian Crook, I would put down in that hero type category. Tell us something we don't know about your Norwich spell. Oh, I can't say a lot on camera, but something nice. Tell us something we don't know about your Norwich spell. I don't know. I don't know. Can I pass?
You can pass.
Can I pass?
You can pass.
When did it nearly end early for you at Norwich? I think at the time, I would say when I first got on the team. When I first got on the team, and then I got what they call now rotated or rested. But again, it was frustrating for me because I didn't have no explanation. I felt I was playing well. So I would have left before the first Premiership started, which would have been the 92 season. I might have left before that. Even before that, I was playing for the Norwich City youth team and Ajax approached me. So I had a couple of opportunities to leave then, but decided to stay, thankfully. Right, next question. Your favourite Norwich City moment or memory? It's got to be Europe, isn't it? It's got to be Europe. It's got to be playing against Bayern Munich. Who do you miss and why? I miss everything. I mean, there's not a particular person I miss. I think you miss the actual football. You miss the actual community of football. You miss the players. You miss the banter. It's because it's a community. And like you said, when you're around players, you're almost like robots. You come in, you're told what to do. You're kind of spoilt in a way. And it's hard to adjust to it when you first retire. As you've probably seen, there's been a lot of quite sad things with mental health and all that. I'll put it down the same category as when people are in the army, because you're used to being around your own type of people all the time. And even though it's fun and everything, all of a sudden, it's almost like you're starting your adulthood again. When you leave football, you've got to start adjusting. So I would say it's not so much who I miss, it's more the actual environment of football I miss the most. Who don't you miss? Oh, God. That'd be horrible. That means I don't like the person, doesn't it? No. It sounds a little bit... But there's no one that I don't really miss. Your Norwich City, you'd regret. I wouldn't say a regret. I would have loved to have seen if we could have pushed on any further, because it's nice, like we did in Leicester, it's nice having that recognition of doing well and people saying you've got a great setup with the team, and we proved a lot of people wrong, people who were spending 10 times as much money as us. So it'd been nice to see whether we could have just had a little try for another season before we all start to break up as a squad. Next one. Was the grass greener? I'd say yeah. I think Newcastle was a brilliant step up for me. You had Kevin Keegan there, Terry McDermott. So the type of football they were playing was Liverpool style football, which was attacking, entertaining, never got asked to defend once. So I was more than happy with that. You know, I played with some great players, you know, Andy Cole, Peter Beardsley at Newcastle. Then I went to Tottenham, played with David Ginola, Les Ferdinand, Teddy Sheringham, the names go on. So when you're playing along that and you know, you get that recognition, you can't regret it. You can't regret it. So no regrets. And the grass was slightly greener, I'd say, slightly greener. Your message to the Norwich City fans. Message to Norwich City fans was, I've always been appreciated, even though I'm from the other end, I wouldn't say where. You've always accepted me. You've been great from even when I was a child up until adulthood. I've always been made welcome here, like coming here today. So I'd like to say thanks to all the fans. I love you a lot, and hopefully we'll have a lot more successful seasons at Norwich City. Chris Sutton, because he loves talking. I've seen all these Instagrams. He's a guy who's gone from not talking to anyone when he was at football club. You can't get him off the screen now. So yeah, put him here. Let him talk here.
Chiropractic. Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.